This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hyper-political people tend to forget about this fact. As that messaging splashed across the television set, you know what happened? Joe Biden saw his job approval numbers going down and down and down and down.
Kamala knew that if she were to run for president in 2028, one of her likely challengers would be Gavin Newsom. The Newsoms themselves are not as wealthy as you think that they are. The people in their orbit have money. They themselves don't have that kind of generational wealth.
The Save America Act is probably the most important piece of legislation that we've had since the One Big Beautiful Bill a year ago.
I'm assuming that is going to apply to the midterm elections coming up. We're not going to have any more of this. Hey, in Washington, we need 3 weeks.
I don't expect a ruling for Trump on this. I could be surprised, but the oral arguments did not go good for the Trump administration.
All right. Before we get into some really good things, because there are really good things we're going to talk about, we have Senator Tommy Tuberville coming on. We have got some wins in the courts. We have this great stuff out of California if you hate Gavin Newsom. So there are great things coming. But I want to talk just again about kitchen table issues that matter so much to so many people. And maybe this is near and dear to your heart. Maybe it's not. Hyper-political people tend to forget about this fact, and it is a fact. Most people, the majority of people, the vast majority of people, if they're not making ends meet, if they're feeling underwater, they're just not making ends meet, can't find a good job, can't buy a house, they don't really care about anything else. Anything else. So you could bring up an issue, I could bring up an issue that I care passionately about. Abortion is a great example of this. I'm a huge, huge pro-life person, super passionate about that issue. And if things are going well for a lot of people, you know, they got a good job, making ends meet, these kinds of things. If things are going well, I could probably get real engagement with that person if I sat down and tried to talk to them. Hey, this is why pro-life is important and things like that. But when you can't pay the bills, when your 30-year-old son's living at home, he's put in 500 resumes, can't get a call back. When you can't afford this, you can't afford that, you can't afford insurance anymore. You don't want to hear about abortion. You don't want to hear about foreign policy. You don't care. If things aren't right in your house, you stop caring about the neighbor's house. This is human nature. We political people, you and me, we can lose sight of that. I try very hard to not lose sight of that because I hang around a lot of people who talk politics, but I hang around a lot of normal people because I don't live in Washington, D.C. And every time I'm around these people, when we're out, we're throwing horseshoes, we're having dinner, we're doing anything like that, I do not hear good things ever about the state of the economy. Even if that person, that man, that woman is personally doing well economically, their kids aren't. Kids can't find good work. Kids can't find any work. My 17-year-old just went on a job hunt. By the grace of God, he finally found something. He's hanging drywall. But it took him forever to find something. When I was a kid, 17 years old, it's the first place you walk in, pretty much hires you every time if they have a spot. The jobs market sucks. And what sucks so bad about it is this is a recent development. And look, we can recap the whole thing, but it really comes down to this. We chose to stop an economy for a chest cold and then print $7 trillion. 5 years later, you have half the purchasing power you used to do. And, you know, while people have been suffering and are suffering, I think back to the Biden administration, and it always struck me, remember we talked about it many times before, how cold the messaging was.
Bidenomics, Biden's formula for strong economic growth from the bottom up. It's so much greater than even the experts in economic stuff expected it to be.
How are you feeling tonight? Are you feeling confident tonight? The Biden administration is crediting Bidenomics.
The economy is great. It's a Goldilocks economy. I don't recall an economy that is this good.
Our economy is doing so well.
But guess what? It's working.
Bidenomics is working.
Bidenomics is working. It is actually working.
My God, really is morning in America right now.
From your lips, Cornell.
Bidenomics is changing their lives for the better.
Most economists fear the most that the United States economy is too strong.
We haven't seen an economy like this, and the Biden administration has been more successfully economically than the New Deal.
The Bidenomics, this has been the greatest economic growth of any country in the world.
While people were suffering, and as that messaging splashed across the television set, you know what happened? Joe Biden saw his job approval numbers going down and down and down and down, because what you absolutely cannot do when people are suffering is tell them they're not. It just makes people mad. Doesn't work. And then when the poll numbers were going down and they were looking and people were mad about the economy, again, they no humility at all. It was just a messaging problem.
About the economy, sir, what's your outlook on the economy next year?
All good. Take a look. Got reported the right way.
I'm not asking you to play therapist with the American voter, but there seems to be a disconnect between the numbers we're seeing and the way people are feeling about the economy. And how do you account for it?
I agree with you that there's a disconnect, and I don't have a simple and convincing answer.
He's got a lot of things to tell. Why do you think that it has not penetrated the American public?
Well, look, these things don't sell themselves, and it's one of the reasons I'm really looking forward to that State of the Union address. I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
Why do you think, though, with recent polling numbers, that potentially the policies maybe aren't resonating with some of the base or some of the Americans here in the United States?
Listen, first of all, I think that we know that it takes time for people to feel the policies.
It takes time. Look, you got to sell it. This is bad. And this leads me to this. It's not the end of the world, but it's a word of caution for the Trump administration. We just had Pew Research just publish something, and it showed that now, for the first time ever, the majority of American households have two parents working. We have an unbelievable number of adult children living at home. Donald Trump is naturally going to be, you know, over the top about how great and beautiful and perfect everything is. It's because it's his personality. He's always been this way. He's always one of these larger than life guys. Every woman's the most beautiful. Every dude's the most handsome ever. Every sports star is the best that ever was. Everything is the best ever. The most beautiful. That's how Donald Trump is. I just want to caution the White House a little bit. Trump said, put this on Truth Social. Our country is doing great. Record jobs, numbers, and stock market. Best economy ever. I know that is Trump's way, and I genuinely know he doesn't mean anything by it. I understand that completely. I'm not faulting him for it. I wouldn't lead with that between now and November. I wouldn't lead with that. You don't have to go out and tell everybody everything sucks. I'm not saying that's the solution, but to the people who aren't making it, how does that land? Not well, right? All right, let's move on. Talk about many other things before we do that. You want to feel better about everything? Everything in life. Feel better about work, home, relationships, everything. Natural herbal supplements can help you do that. Did you know that? Why do you think you've heard me tell you about Chalk for so long? Because for 4 years, I have taken a male vitality stack, natural herbal supplements with my breakfast every morning. 4 years. I have more energy now than I did 4 years ago. How's that possible at 44? I feel better. I work better. I'm better at home. Oh, I don't know. Maybe because clinically tested, the male vitality stack, 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days without jamming needles in your arm. You want to feel like a different person? You're 60, 90 days away from being totally different, and I mean better in every way. You got to go get a subscription. Chalk.com/JesseTB. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You gotta make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I think there may be some trouble for Gavin Newsom. And I'll be honest with you. When I first heard these headlines that Gavin Newsom's being investigated, DOJ investigation, I took note of it. We've talked about it before on the show. We've talked about it with John Phillips on the show. But you start digging into it, and it has to do with his wife's charities and things like that. And it just got kind of convoluted. And I thought to myself, well, that's the kind of thing they're just going to brush aside, and he's going to keep going. But people out there, Mark Halperin on Fox News, are talking about this possibly ending the Newsom presidential campaign. I just have such a hard time believing that. But we'll ask John about it. Joining me now, the great John Phillips of the John Phillips Show. Okay, John, this thing's been marinating for, what is it, a week or two now. Is this thing picking up steam?
A couple of things you should know about this. First of all, the investigation started when Joe Biden was president. So this is not a Donald Trump investigation of Gavin Newsom. This started out in a Democratic administration. The other thing that's important is that the office that's handling this is actually the office in Sacramento, meaning a California whistleblower was the one who notified the feds that something was wrong in California. Again, that's evidence that leads you to believe it wasn't Donald Trump that started this. In addition, you have the fact that the source that he's being investigated is not the federal government. It's not the Department of Justice. It's not the FBI. It's not the Attorney General. It's not Harmeet Dhillon. It's Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom came out and said that he's being investigated. At the same time that this is going on, you also have two separate investigations that are going on right now in California involving Dana Williamson, who is Gavin Newsom's former chief of staff and enforcer, who is cutting a plea deal with the feds for stealing money from Javier Becerra. And then in Oakland, you have another investigation going on right now where the mayor of Oakland, the former mayor of Oakland, Sheng Tao, and her benefactors, her political benefactors over at California Waste Solutions and the Dong family, they're also being investigated by the feds. They were prolific donors to Gavin Newsom. So you have all of these power players in California now who are looking at federal charges, and they're willing to do just about anything to cut a deal to reduce their sentences if they have dirt on Gavin Newsom. If they know something illegal is going on in Sacramento, now's the time to drop a dime. And maybe they're doing it, maybe they aren't. I can tell you this. Here in California, and I was in Sacramento all week last week, the feeling is that this is going to be a serious problem for Gavin.
Oh, well, that is spicy, isn't it? Okay, now, you're there, you're in the know when it comes to California politics. I am very much not. I fully admit that. That's why we talk so often. So explain this to me. I'm from the outside looking in. I find out this investigation into Newsom started inside the borders of the Communist Republic of California. So that leads me to believe that Maybe this was an internal Democrat takeout. Democrats are the only ones who take out Democrats. Republicans never have the stones to do something like that. Could this be Gavin Newsom's enemies inside the Communist Party?
It could be. Now, keep in mind, this came from the feds. Gavin Newsom has a or had a very top-level frenemy in the Biden administration by the name of Kamala Harris, who was the attorney general in California. Kamala knew that if she were to run for president in 2028, one of her likely challengers would be Gavin Newsom. Now, I'm not saying that Kamala Harris had anything to do with this, but clearly there are people within California who are talking to the feds. And I would also add one thing. A lot of people say, well, the Newsoms are rich. He comes from the Getty family, oil trust, and she comes from the Siebel family. They're a very wealthy family. The Newsoms themselves are not as wealthy as you think that they are. The people in their orbit have money. They themselves don't have that kind of generational wealth. So people look at this and they go, oh, a rich couple like them wouldn't participate in a grift for pennies because they don't need the risk. They don't need to have the liability to go out and make this kind of money. And the answer is they actually do. Because Gavin Newsom lives a very luxurious life. His salary won't support it. And they have to find ways to make money on the side. He's making money with his book. They make money. She has her non-for-profit. So the fact that the allegations, I guess, that are swirling, that they were doing something shady to make a little extra on the side, I don't think you can immediately dismiss something like that as, well, this is a rich couple and they would never do it. I know that when you work in television, you work in radio, people frequently think that you make so much more money than you actually do. And I think we do that with politicians, too. We do that with people who are in positions of power. The Newsoms are not the Gettys. They're not the Siebels. And if they participated in something like this to shake a few nickels out of the tree, I wouldn't be surprised.
Are we talking about a few nickels? How much money are we talking about here?
Well, the exact dollar amount, we don't know because they haven't been charged with a crime officially yet. So right now it's just speculation. But what his wife, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, has is a non-for-profit where they make feminist videos and they can solicit investors. And frequently these investors are people with business in front of the state of California. And then she turns around and she sells her feminist videos to California schools. And the schools have to pay for the videos to show the videos in the classrooms. So it's a nice way to, for an actress to make movies and to pay herself a handsome salary.
I almost forgot she was an actress. I believe she knew Harvey Weinstein at some point in time. Anyway, we'll set that aside. Speaking of exactly that kind of a thing, you brought up Dome earlier and she went on Don Lemon's show. Here she was.
I really, truly believe this. We each have light inside of us. And we need to know that that is what inspires our hope as much as anything external to ourselves. And when we feel that and not allow an election or an individual to dampen that light, and instead let that light kind of carry us, in particular through moments of darkness, that we not only act on that hope, but we inspire that hope in each other. And in particular at this moment, it is so important that we not only have hope, but that we understand that that should be a verb.
Couple things, John. One, I'm not sure that's light inside of Don Lemon. And two, my own personal horror at this woman leads me to believe that she's not going to run for president again, surely, because she's just so dumb and she doesn't have it and people don't like her. But you and I both know in politics, there are only two steps to get to be president of the United States of America: win the primary, win the general. If it looks like you're going to win the primary, you run, right?
I have no clue what the hell she just said. Every time I see that woman on TV, I think to myself, in her mind, Rombauer Chardonnay is a food group in and of itself, because she always seems like she's blowing a point too whenever this woman shows up on television. You're right that she could be the Democratic nominee for president this time around. We don't know what their calendar is going to be. Typically, of course, on the Republican side and historically on the Democratic side, it was Iowa that would go first and then New Hampshire and then Nevada and then South Carolina. But they changed their calendar, don't forget, last time to make sure that states with a lot of black voters were voting first, because that's what saved Joe Biden in 2020 in the Democratic primary, South Carolina, and then a lot of the southern states on Super Tuesday. If they continue with that calendar where states with a lot of black voters in the Democratic primary go first, I don't see anyone in that primary that can beat her. I mean, who is going to do better with black voters than Kamala in places like South Carolina and Georgia? Pete Buttigieg? Yeah, right. Gavin Newsom? No way. AOC? Probably not. Shapiro? Definitely not. So if the map and the calendar favors her, I could easily see her running the table with those early voting states. And then what do you do to stop her? It might be a runaway train where the Democrats end up with an unelectable nominee the same way they did in 2024.
Okay, so I mean, I have to ask as we wrap this thing up here. Black Democrats, Southern primary voters, if Josh Shapiro is too Jewish for them and Pete Buttigieg is too gay for them, what is AOC to them? Why would they reject her?
Well, if you look at Southern black voters, typically you're talking about religious people, you're talking about older people, you're talking about people who are Democratic partisans, but they're not necessarily socialists. And so a more partisan Democratic message, particularly from a messenger like Kamala Harris, is more likely to appeal to them than the government should own the means of production, which is what AOC would be running on, as would any socialist. So I don't see how AOC takes those voters from her. Maybe I'm wrong, because socialists have been having a lot of success in these Democratic primaries, as these incumbent members of Congress run against them, and some of them are getting picked off right and left. But I just see Kamala having an advantage over someone like AOC in the South in particular.
John, as always, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. We're getting some wins. You know that, right? Some good things happening. We're going to talk about those things in a moment. Before we talk about those things, I've been doing a lot more reading lately on the heroes of Mac V SOG. It was this super special unit in Vietnam where our guys went behind enemy lines and they died in droves, and they just did the most crazy, heroic, movie-like things you've ever heard or read about in your entire life. Did you know that the guy who runs Pure Talk did two tours with Mac V SOG? In case you're wondering, hey, what? Why would this phone company, Pure Talk, why would they hire Americans? So when you switch to Pure Talk, you get to deal with an American who speaks English. Why would anybody do that? You can just create another call center in India, save you some money. Well, the people who run Pure Talk love the United States of America, and that's the kind of company I want to send my money to. They're on the same 5G network. You're going to have great coverage. You can keep your phone, keep your number. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This horrible thing to say that one of the worst, most anti-election democracy things that's ever been proposed. They say it's all about ID, voter ID. It's not. They will remove 25 million people off the rolls. Why? Because they'll require under this act, which is not going to pass, and we're not going to let it pass. We've defeated in court. I was a lead plaintiff in the decision to do that. We've refused to give them the votes that they would want for this. We never will. What it does is it says every state send your election rolls not to the Justice Department or the voting division, but to the Department of Homeland Security, where Musk and Doge and Vote have installed an algorithm that determines whether you're legitimately right to vote or not. The algorithm is a fix. It'll knock 20 million people, 30 million people off the rolls, and they don't tell you.
Well, that's an odd thing to say, isn't it? I wonder why the SAVE Act would remove 20 to 30 million people if there was some sort of a verification. And I wonder also, why would Democrats oppose such a plan? I bet the coach knows. Joining me now, candidate for governor of the great state of Alabama, but for now he is stuck in the United States Senate, and I feel for him on that. The coach, Tommy Tuberville. Coach, could you explain to me how the SAVE Act would remove all these voters of these American citizens?
Thank you, Jesse. First of all, where does he come up with that number? That just happens to be the same amount of people that we talk about every day that's illegal in this country that is voting. And the Save America Act is probably the most important piece of legislation that we've had since the One Big Beautiful Bill a year ago. It won't pass because we have rhino Republicans along with the Democrats that they don't want to break tradition of the Senate. They want to say, hey, let's keep it the way it was. Well, it is what it is. We've lost 10 to 15 states because of their crooked voting rules that they have in place, such as California. And we're going to lose more and more blue states every year. This is going to turn into lie, cheat, and steal when it comes to elections. So if we don't pass this, it will be America of the past. We won't be able to save America because we won't be able to have any kind of control whatsoever because these lying, cheating, stealing socialist, communist Democrats will take over and it'll be over with.
Coach, can you explain something? Obviously, you may not even know because I'm asking you to know the motivations of another man, but these Republicans, we'll set aside the Democrats, these Republicans who have an axe to grind with Trump for one reason or another, and so they're going to try to, you know, throw everything he tries to do under the bus. I got all that. But do they not know what you just said is true, or do they not care? What is it?
I think the hatred for President Trump is so bad that they can't see the light for you know, everything around them. They just, everything's kind of closing in on them, and they think that if they can save this country by just waiting out President Trump, tomorrow will be the day of reckoning. I'm hoping President Trump comes to lunch, walks in, slams the door behind him, and says, okay, those of you that are against the Save America Act, please stand up one at a time and give me a good explanation and sell me on the fact that why we shouldn't do this, why your state basically voted for me, but you're going to vote against the people of your state. I hope he does that. I think we can get everything out on the table, and then we can forget about it. Either we get it passed or we can't get it passed, and it's just unfortunate. Mike Lee's taking a beating right now, Jesse, because he's trying to say, listen, let's just go out and debate. This is what they used to do in the Senate. Go out and debate. Stay out there as long as we need to get something passed. But he's taking heat, not from the Democrats, but from Republicans. So I think tomorrow will be a day of reckoning for the Save America Act. Hopefully we can get something accomplished. And thank goodness President Trump's coming over and it's kind of the last swing at bat.
What's the problem with debate? Is it just the fact that John Thune has friends in leadership who are against this whole thing, or just old-time Senate friends, and he knows they're not going to look great if they start debating against this thing on the Senate floor? It's hard. I know I'm a cynic. It's hard to look at it as anything other than that.
Yeah, they like going by the rules, but this is a rule. I mean, you can do this. You know, we've sat down for hours with Mike Lee, and he's explained it. Again, this is what they used to do. Just go out there and talk, and each one of you one at a time get up and debate against the Democrats and figure out a way to get this passed. And I don't, there's no way that the Democrats would stay up here and debate for weeks and weeks and weeks. So let's just outlast them. We're not going to bust a filibuster. It's the only chance we got to do it unless we do bust a filibuster in the long run, but that's not going to happen because it's not the tradition of the Senate. And that's the answer I get from these people all the time. We've not done that before. We're going to stand by the filibuster. We're going to let the Democrats win this November in the Senate, and they're going to do it the next week after they get in the majority.
Coach, you are leaving, which sucks, but there also are a bunch of turds in the GOP who are leaving. Could I argue that, no, we're not going to get the SAVE Act passed now, but maybe 4 years from now, 2 years from now, that we're inching closer because we're shedding some dead weight?
You'll be a little bit closer, but again, you still got people up here that are going to stand for what they think is right. And the time will tell on that. But you've got some people leaving that, again, it's not as much about the Save America Act. It's about not going along with President Trump. They've just got it to where they feel like that they know more about what's going on than the president. They think the president just shoots from the hip. But this is not one that did just come out of the blue. This one we've talked about on and off for the last year and a half since President Trump's gotten in. Nobody's really pushed it that hard because they know it's going to take a filibuster vote to get it done at the end of the day. But it's just unfortunate.
Can we fix the Senate? I know you're going to be governor of Alabama, and I'm sure you're happy to be leaving that cesspool, but is this something the American people can fix? I know it's not going to be tomorrow, but if we stay involved and active in primaries, can we get this fixed?
Yeah, you can fix it, but I think it's going to take a committee of people that gets together every year and says, okay, this Senate seat's open, and you start interviewing people that want to run for these Senate seats. You just can't take the first Joe, a common Joe from a state, and say, okay, he says he's a Republican and we're going to get behind him and run. That's gotten us in trouble because we've got some people that are not quite as conservative as a lot of us up here. So I think there needs to be more vetting for people that run for positions. In the United States Senate is a very important job. If we don't do that, then I think we're going to continue to have problems. Plus, you know, the thing that you need to do is, you know, from a leadership standpoint, is we need to play to win. You know, I coached all my life, and I'd go into a game knowing if I was an underdog, I still played to win. I'd go for fourth downs, kick an onside kick, do something to change the momentum. We don't do that here. We've got to take advantage of the rules ourselves. And we got to play to win. Up here, for some reason, we play just to survive, just to get reelected. And that's gotten us in trouble.
Speaking of playing to win, how do we fix college football? I mean, what it's become just absolutely blows me away. Every year, players bouncing around, different teams, driving Lamborghinis. It's awful. It's worse than the NFL now. How do we fix this?
Yeah, you got to. A socialist judge that passed a rule saying the players could make money. Now, listen, I'm not against kids making money. I think if they, if we'd have done it right years ago and revenue shared the money from television at each school that came in, then you gave them part of the money, then it would have been fine. Well, we didn't do that. The schools fought back on that. Now they can make whatever. So cat's out of the bag on that. Ted Cruz and Senator Cantwell from the Commerce Committee have a bill out that is very long, 111 pages, and it gets the government way too involved in sports. It will be a disaster. It'll be Obamacare 2.0. I'm not voting for it. And I'll be one of the few that doesn't vote for it. I've I fortunately know a lot about it. I'm trying to tell people about it, but it will probably pass the Senate. I don't know whether it passed the House. The only thing we need to do, Jesse, is we say, okay, you got 5 years of play, no exceptions, and you get a one-time transfer that's free. After that, if you transfer, you got to sit out a year. If you fix the eligibility rule and if you fix the transfer rule, everything else would take care of itself. But Ted Cruz's bill gets into scheduling, conference realignments, 20-person congressional committee that makes decisions on rules in college sports. I mean, can you imagine this federal government running one of the most important things in our country, college athletics? I feel for all these teams across the country, these schools, because they're going to be under the rule of the federal government.
Coach, go get them. I appreciate you. All right. Judges, I know we're all mad about them today. We'll talk to Alex Sawyer about that in a moment. Before we talk to Alex, do you have high interest debt you're carrying around like a friggin' elephant? That's what it feels like, doesn't it? A financial elephant riding around on your back, 20, 30% interest. You can't ever get ahead. Every month, you're lucky if you're making the bare minimum interest payments. Well, do you also have a mortgage? American financing is made for people just like you. They have heard all the worst stories. They know what you're going through. American financing is here to get you out. Here's the bad news. They can't do anything unless you get a hold of them. Sitting around and hoping, wishing, or giving up is not a solution. AmericanFinancing.net is the solution. Go to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse and get help today. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Supreme Court had opinions today. Alex Sawyer also has opinions on their opinions, and so we're going to ask her opinions now and find out if we got any W's or we took home a big fat L or two. Joining me now, editor-at-large of The Washington Times, Alex Sawyer. Okay, what opinions did we get, Alex, and are you happy or are you drinking a glass of Chardonnay as we speak?
Well, I've missed joining you. It's kind of been a slow rollout of opinions. So I'm hoping that, like, over the next several days, I get to see more of you. So first, there was only really one opinion I wrote up from today. It had to do with a prisoner who had his dreadlocks shaved off, and he said it was against his religious rights. He tried to sue the prison guards. The Supreme Court said, no, you can't sue these guards in their individual capacity. So it's kind of like, you know, somewhat interesting case, but not going to impact, you know, a large audience. Those, though, that will, of course, you and I have kept talking about birthright citizenship. We expect that to come in the coming days. There's two more major rulings that I'm waiting for. One is the transgender athlete case, the state laws out of West Virginia and Idaho, where they said only biological girls can compete in girls' sports. I mean, go figure. So that's been challenged by transgender athletes. The Supreme Court is expected to rule on those in any day now. Lastly, super big, a case over mail-in balloting out of Mississippi. Mississippi allows for 5 days to count mail-in ballots. Other states are even longer, Jesse. Illinois, I think it's 2 weeks. The state of Washington, 21 days. We've seen the whole count with these mail-in ballots take issue. So basically, the RNC sued, and they did it in Mississippi, knowing that it was going to be a friendly court system all the way up through the Fifth Circuit, saying, hey, there's one federal election day, so that is when mail-in ballots should be counted. And they won at the Fifth Circuit. So that has now on appeal. We will see what the justices say. How they rule with that, you know, in terms of Mississippi law could impact these other states. So I think that's a really big one to watch. The next big opinion day is Thursday. I suspect we have several major ones. And then usually they wrap up by, I would say, early July. Usually the last week of June is what I say, which I would predict then that means they make Monday, Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday next week opinion days.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to be seeing so much of me. You're going to be sick of my face. Okay, so let me focus on one of the last ones you brought up, the mail-in ballots thing. Assuming, and I know that's a dangerous thing to do, that we get some kind of a ruling on Thursday, Monday, something like that. Now, I'm assuming that is going to apply to the midterm elections coming up. We're not going to have any more of this. Hey, in Washington, we need 3 weeks. That's going to apply to the next election, right?
It should, and it would probably depend on state laws about like how fast could they implement these changes. When do people receive their mail-in ballots? But to be able to, you know, follow a Supreme Court precedent in a court order, the states need to be able to comply. And let's say that then they wouldn't do so for the midterms, then you would have possibly losing candidates that or ones that are waiting to find out, like a Spencer Pratt, for example, although that's more to do with LA and local. But like someone like that had to wait for days could launch a court challenge and point to the Supreme Court ruling. So, yeah, I would think it would be something that would kick in right away.
Okay. You and I have talked about it many times before. You know, it is my baby, this birthright citizenship farce that our country's just been pillaged by these barbarians for years. But I've never gotten warm fuzzies that the Supreme Court is going to shoot this down. What are your feelings on all this?
Yeah, so when I left the Supreme Court oral arguments with birthright citizenship, I think you and I talked, and I had noted that there were several justices that kind of seemed skeptical of the Trump administration's arguments. Now, I think the best case scenario would be something like what happened with the tariffs case, where Kavanaugh kind of spelled out in a either concurrence or dissent that, well, the administration or Congress could do this, but here's how to do it. Kind of like he did with the tariffs, like, well, this isn't lawful here, the court says, but you know, there's these other laws the administration could cite to implement these tariffs. Some sort of like roadmap might be helpful. But yeah, I don't expect a ruling for Trump on this. I could be surprised, but the oral arguments did not go good for the Trump administration. On that note, Jesse, because, you know, that's kind of the what has been reported across the board and like what court watchers expect, I asked several senators so far, you know, like, have they been coming up with a plan B? Are there talks on what to do about birthright citizenship? No, there is nothing. They tell me there is no plan. So, you know, what a disappointment.
Right. I'm glad these people are working hard for us. Okay, so we're going to get a big fat L on that one. But are we getting or have we gotten any immigration wins out of the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, you're asking me a question on immigration. I have an immigration reporter who covers strictly immigration law. So I'd have to like go comb through what he's covered separate and apart from me. But I do know today specifically, there was a ruling from an appeals court that was a win for the Trump administration. There was some sort of expedited removal policy they were trying to implement, which prior presidents had allowed, basically, I guess you could say, bypass certain due process rights people would claim for these people who are illegals here if they were 100 miles within the border. The Trump administration erased that and tried to go beyond that 100 miles. And they used things like, well, is there any proof that the illegal alien tried to made any notice about them being in the country in the quarter of the past 2 years? How long have they been here? And the judges, that was two Trump appointees, basically said, no, the Trump policy is fine. It doesn't have to be within this 100-mile radius or whatever it was that prior administrations did. So this would give the administration further reach to then be able to go ahead and expedite some removals. So that's probably the biggest, you know, I guess most timely immigration win I've seen for the Trump administration.
We'll friggin' take it. Okay, let's talk about the lower courts, shall we? Everybody woke up, everybody's raging today. about some Biden-appointed judge that was born in Trinidad and Tobago, I believe. Her first name is Sparkle. On my life, I'm not making that up. And she decided that the federal government, what, can't have access to the voter rolls?
Yeah, so I looked at this one. I thought some of the reporting was kind of, you know, difficult to follow. So I looked at the opinion. And basically what the Trump administration was trying to do was make a federal database to make, you know, verifying voters and voter rolls easier and, you know, I guess a more speedy process for states. So they're partnering with these states. And the problem that these voting right liberal groups had was that they were using social security numbers. And also they tried to use like what's called the APA, basically like a federal law that says the administration, when they implement new rules, have to go through a certain steps and that they didn't follow those steps. So there wasn't like a rule making a notice, like enough time in between, all that. So this judge basically said, yeah, like this whole trying to make this database and work with the states and using social security numbers violates privacy rights and the right to vote. I suspect that you will have the Trump administration appeal this ruling. There has not been an appeal yet, but I looked, I think that Politico or some, whoever wrote this up that I was reading said that, oh, it's been 5 days and there's no notice of appeal from the Trump administration. Well, I think they have 60 days in something like this. So we will see what they do, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go ahead and, like, you know, move this one up the ladder.
Okay, where is up the ladder? Is it the Supreme Court?
Eventually, it would have to be. So I think it, depending on, was this at the D.C. Circuit or D.C. District Court? Then it would go to D.C. Circuit and then from there to the Supreme Court. I would think that they would try to go to the D.C. Circuit first and ask for them to stay the lower court's ruling pending some sort of oral arguments. And maybe they will, depending on the panel they get. It's kind of like a lottery these days. Are you going to get judges that are friendly to this administration, or are you going to get those who are not? Usually Biden and Obama appointees. We've seen Trump appointees, sometimes Bush appointees be friendly to this administration. Reagan's appointees, I think, are kind of like a toss-up. Surprisingly, they have ruled against Trump quite a bit often.
Oh, that's unbelievably disappointing. All right, Alex, finally, maybe the legal question I get the most emailed into the show is, what do we do about these judges? We wake up, we read these headlines, and it feels so helpless because we can't vote for these people. You know, they're in there for life. Is there anything that can be done about activist judges?
I'm so glad you asked me that. I had an interview with Chairman Grassley, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, just recently, and I asked him, you know, if the House were to entertain any sort of judicial impeachment, let's say against a Judge Boasberg, who we've heard, you know, in criticism about how he's handled the Trump administration and their immigration efforts, overreach there, obviously the Arctic Frost thing with the signing off on the subpoenas for phone records and tracking of lawmakers, and I think it was like 400 something, including conservative groups. But anyways, long story short, Grassley said, I would have to be a juror, so I should not stand in judgment yet, but I would encourage the House to do whatever they feel they need to do. And to me, that was a bit of a green light or a push for House Republicans to move forward in holding some of these rogue judges accountable, because I think the judicial impeachment route is the only way to send a message that this type of activism will not be tolerated.
Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And we're going to miss Trump when he's gone. A couple of different reasons, and these reasons are actually combined. One, he's very funny. He's just naturally funny. Some people are just naturally funny. They say funny things. And two, Trump, unlike any president I know of, sure there may be historical ones, but Trump just says whatever's on his mind. Now, that could be for better or worse, right? Someday he's calling out some media dirtball and calling him an idiot, and the next day he's telling some woman she's ugly, you know, or chiming in on the Oscars or something dumb like that. But it's so unique. The energy secretary was attempting to give out some information, and Trump was, he was not interested.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. So 120, 141 years ago, Albert Einstein, 121 years ago. Albert Einstein published a paper
on Nobody cares.
Good point, good point.
I never go back. I just, and usually they won't catch you. But
published a paper on the photoelectric effect, recognizing the quantum behavior.
I think my favorite part was after Trump cracks his own joke and insults him, he turns and looks at someone else and says, that's true. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.